Come in, come in, find a seat. This is upgrading your platform, how to get there, or how to get here, because you're all here. Fantastic, our timer has started. I want to do a shout out to the AV sound and recording people in the back. Can you guys give them a round of applause just for surviving this long?
It's Friday. They've had a long week.
Without them, you would not be able to hear us or see us do anything. So we're useless without them. My name is Rick Claus. I'm a senior technical evangelist with Microsoft, and I am graciously joined by...
I'm Joey Snow. I'm also a senior technical evangelist with Microsoft.
Now, I completely roped him into helping me out with the session because this was a session we did in TechEd North America. Very popular, very well received, lots of good information. I didn't ask him ahead of time. I just tweeted about it and said that he was going to do it.
That's a little uncomfortable when, he tweets out to his 10 million followers that I'm going to be presenting with him, and he hadn't talked to me yet. So the first thing I did is go down to Rick's office and said, so did you want to ask me first? Or, well, that's all right. So I've decided to join you.
Yes, so graciously
I've agreed
to be able to do this. This is WCA B336. If you're on the Twitters, our Twitter handle's up there. You're welcome to send us a question along those lines or send us a comments as well in that particular order of Rickster CDN or @JoeySnow. And the problem is there's two of us up here. You have to fight over the clicker for who advances what, right?
Yes.
So I like to start the session off by, first of all, thank you for sticking it out to the very last day of TechEd. And I will remind you that all of Mark Brasinovich's sessions and Mark Manassi's sessions are recorded. You can go and see them later, so you can stay with us here all day long to talk about upgrading and upgrading your infrastructure. I decided to kind of start off a little bit with a question. I asked this question on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn before TechEd North America to basically say, hey, if you're faced with upgrading your infrastructure, as all of us probably are because you're all in the room about upgrading your infrastructure, what is the part that concerns you the most for that upgrade? Anybody? Say anything? What would you say? What concerns you the most? Support engineers that have to do the actual work? That's a good one. Anybody?
Print servers.
Active Directory. You're in the right spot because this is the one we're talking about, Active Directory. The results I got back, completely non-scientific, absolutely not supported by IDC, by Forrester, by anybody else. This was just 200 people that came back and responded to me. The primary thing people are the most worried about under C is actually application servers. So your SharePoint, your exchanges, your SAP, and other things like that, because those are the ones that generally you've got support contracts, you've got to stay the same version, and you have an awful lot of stuff you have to do heavy moving. The other percentage of stuff, so basically 80% of the other stuff, is what we're basically going to be covering. We're going to be talking about virtualization hosts, we're going to be talking about clusters, we're going to be talking about file servers and file server migration, as well as domain controllers, and a couple of people actually said other. I don't know what the other actually is, but some people said other.
Print servers.
Print servers, yeah, there's a couple in there for print servers. So we got a little bit of everything for you. We did sprinkle this across three different sessions. The first one is specifically around Active Directory. It takes at least 75 minutes or more to cover all the nuances around Active Directory migration, which brings up my next question to you.
Those are awesome transitions,
I know.
By the way, there's
only a couple of cheesy transitions at the very beginning, but my graph isn't there. Don't bring up the graph just yet. Oh, okay. I was going to ask them first. We didn't rehearse this first. So, does this hold true? Who here is still running Windows 2000 or NT4? Two people.
Three.
Three people. From the three people, NT4 or not? He doesn't want to answer yes or no because he's scared about it. If it is NT4, I'm going to have to ask you to leave. We can't help you. Unless there is a 17-figure support contract that's there. But as far as 2000, 2003 are concerned, it's a very small... Oh, you took the graph away. You hit it. Very small percentage of people are still at 2003. So who here in the room is at 2003 level still? That would be 2003. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Let's call it a dozen or so. People are at 2003.
Yeah.
A little bit more.
Yep.
And then 2008. 2008 R2. That's the majority of you. Congratulations. You made the big jump. Anyone know what that big jump is between 2003 and 2008 R2? Anybody? 64-bit issues, correct. You have to be able to figure out how to do that migration from 32-bit to 64-bit translation. So that's definitely a big jump. And then there's a couple people that are 2012 as well. Anyone 2012 already in the room? You're here for nostalgic reasons, just because you wanted to know what's going on with Active Directory. Well, the good thing is, if it's 2012 and you want to go to 2012 R2, a lot of what we're going to be talking about today directly applies as well. So we're actually going to show you the worst case scenario of going from 2003 all the way to 2012. And then obviously you're going to understand going from 2012 to 2012 R2 is going to be a very easy and natural step for you because you're in the same generation of stuff. In case you haven't noticed, it's easier to migrate from the most recent versions of the stuff that we make to the next most recent version. So the goal is here to give you guys and gals the most information to get you to the most current version as possible in production.
Now, for those of you running 2003, I hope you're aware that next year, so this year, or April 13th of 2014 is when XP ends of life. July the 14th of 2015 is when we end of life Windows Server 2003. So just be aware. So I assume that's why you're here with your 2003 questions, because you've started planning that migration.
One word of advice or one comment. You can bring this, all right. We do not cover the migration from Small Business Server anything to Server 2012 or Server 2008 or 2, anything else like that, because each one of those is a nuance for how you would do it. If you are interested, come on down after the fact. I can point you to a couple of blog articles from some friends of mine that have talked about doing that kind of a migration when we're there. But Active Directory, you've worked with Active Directory before, have you not?
Yes, Active Directory happens to still be in my heart. I spent years and years and years managing enterprises' directories.
So Active Directory is about 14 years old when it came out in the year 2000-ish. And it's come a long way. It solved a lot of problems, which is fantastic for what it does. However, the problem with it being 14 years old, think about what it was like 14 years ago for you. This is a picture of my server room 14 years ago. And this is what I was concerned with trying to get to and upgrade to from NT4. The stellar Windows 2000 operating system with its memory requirements of
256
megabytes of RAM and 2 gigabytes of hard disk space. We actually were playing around with doing some re-architecture of the demo sessions. I keep on forgetting that a 2003 domain controller footprint size is less than a gig or around a gig, whereas 2012 is much more because of all the extra files that are in there. I thought I was missing files when we were making those machines.
Yes. So you actually went through and exported it several times.
Just to make sure I didn't miss it. So who here has a cell phone in your hand? Everyone has a cell phone? Who has the same cell phone they had 14 years ago? Yeah, that's good.
he doesn't have the same one from 14 days ago. So rough week in Madrid.
Working in the world of IT, we all appreciate and get into this job because we appreciate the challenges and the solutions you can present to solve those different types of challenges. Some of those challenges we face are change. We love dealing with those challenges. We kind of are hesitant to deal with change. But by dealing with change, you face new challenges, and you eventually get to a more recent version. We're also pretty risk adverse. We don't like risk because that means that we get in trouble. We could get fired. We could end up losing our jobs. We could end up having to go back to some other type of job. So we tend to put off having to do things that involve change. But unfortunately, this whole industry is about change. So those are some of the projects I worked on before as an example. But who here remembers NT4? Great. Good stuff. I'm glad to see you guys are all here from NT4 days. This was the ideal design, still the ideal design in my personal opinion. KISS principle, keep it simple, fill in the blank for whatever that S happens to be. The simpler the better, meaning that you have the ability to make changes, you have the ability to reduce the amount of administrative overhead that you happen to have, nice and simple. Who here had an NT4 domain that was their environment that was a single domain and nothing else? A very big minority of you, for the most part, had a single domain environment, which is very, very easy. What happens, though?
Well, what happens is that we did a really, really good job of, like, scaring people.
Right.
First and foremost, right? Particularly around Active Directory. Whatever you do, don't implement schema changes. Yes, we remember those days. Yeah. Yeah, we kind of backed off of that a little bit. We kind of started talking about splitting up or kind of changing your design, right? So we would sit down, we would architect all these grandiose ideas of the perfect Active Directory infrastructure. And that could be having multiple domains across a single forest, it could be multiple forests. I'm gonna use a personal example. We actually created, anybody here do the empty root domain followed by other domains underneath it. Now, are you collapsing those back in now?
So you all read the white paper back when the design phase came out. Great, good. Even in the NT4 days, remember these NT4 days?
Oh, I love these.
This is, remember the trust relationship, access to resources was against the trust relationship, whereas logon was with the arrow, I think it was, or something like that. But then potentially you had to go off to an international version of this where you have multiple user account domains and multiple resource domains, and then it just gets worse from there to whatever that lovely mess happened to be by the end of it.
Are we all in this place now? Yeah, acquisitions, and you get all these forests and things that you have to do and you have to deal with as we move forward.
Active Directory solved an awful lot of issues. We made it an awful lot complicated for you, and so basically try to ease up, let go of some of those fears you might have, disband those schema revision committees that you happen to have set up, perhaps, and go forth with a bit of confidence that it's not that bad. We have the ability to undo schema changes with being able to deactivate stuff. We have the ability to change different forest functional levels and that sort of stuff as well. In case you haven't noticed, a lot of the functionality we introduced with 2012 is not dependent upon the forest functional level or the domain functional level. We've kind of decoupled that sort of stuff. Again, trying to make things easier from your migration perspective. So we're all here. When was the last time you actually looked at your Active Directory design and decided it's time to update it? Who here was the same person that designed their Active Directory back when it was put in and are still managing it today? Any of those people that are in the room? Definitely a minority. Everyone else, I'm assuming you inherited Active Directory. And you've all read the beautiful documentation as to why it was created that way, where the GCs are placed, why you have GCs, how many OU structures you have, where the group policies happen to apply, how many sites you have defined, what subnets are associated with sites, because you all read the documentation that we all created back then.
We all have the big red binder, right, that has every change and update to Active Directory ever done since its implementation?
You got it.
We don't? Those don't exist? Mine did. I think it lasts about the first month and a half.
Oh, that's long.
And then I pretty much said, yeah, I'm not updating that one.
That's long. So we're here at 2012 now. You're all trying to get in 2012. You obviously can all go off and download, if you have not, 2012 R2. It's not to be used in a production environment, obviously. It's for a lab environment. It's not supported to do an in-place upgrade of that into 2012 R2 when it becomes RTM. So leave that for your lab. Play around with that. Bring it in as a member server in your lab if you wanted to. But we're going to get you to 2012 up and ready to go for 2012 R2. Now, we decided to talk a little bit about what are some of the advantages for 2012, because Active Directory literally is one of those things. It's like it's your dial tone of your networking structure. It's the guy that doesn't get touched or looked at an awful lot because potentially you didn't design it. You're not aware of all the design considerations. There may be better ways of doing things. So one of the things I like at 2012 is, first of all, PowerShell. 2012 has full integration of all the PowerShell you could ever want. I had a question in Tech at North America from a guy that basically said, hey, HR literally, this sounds like it's a cliche example, but HR literally handed me 15 pages of an Excel spreadsheet of user accounts that need to be created. How can I automate this? And I said, walk over there to the scripting guy's booth, talk to the guys from PowerShell, they'll have you set up in about 10 minutes with a script to do an automated import and management of that completely just using PowerShell. Fantastic stuff.
I am of the mentality when I work in IT, and I spent 20 plus years all the way from the help desk working my way up to where I basically managed enterprise directory services. So I was kind of the big guru of a very, very large enterprise around Active Directory. And once we started looking at and investing in PowerShell for us and for my staff, the mantra around my staff was pretty much, if we're going to do something one time, we're probably going to end up doing it again sometime later. So it's best to take the extra 10 or 15 minutes to figure out kind of how we can automate that, because we're always going to go back to that. I always joke around that I happen to have all of the login scripts that did all the printer mappings and everything else from all of the jobs that I've done previously, and I just took them from job to job to job with me on a floppy disk, and I still have that floppy disk in my office.
Well, in case you don't know, Sony actually stopped making the last floppy disk because the last manufacturer about a couple of months ago.
So I guess I got to get that to a USB stick. But again, it's one of these things where we become creatures of habit. And just like doing everything, we all like to manage in command line. Yes, I'm one of these guys. I'm doing a lot of stuff typing command lines. I don't remember the last time I actually pressed the shutdown button because I just type it and go with it. We become creatures of habit. Well, if that habit starts becoming playing in and implementing inside of a PowerShell and leveraging that power of scripting, you're able to do something one time, and then if you have to run that again, those 50 users that came in from Excel that aren't into their HR main system that maybe we're pulling a feed from,
yeah.
Any of those types of scenarios, you're able to very quickly replicate that. And the other great thing about it is I've forgotten more around IT than I think I know today. And so it's a great reminder because I've got that script that says, hey, this is the script that imported those users. I can go back to that and simply go, that's right, that's how we did it, and a couple minutes refresh, and we're good to go.
Yeah. Now, there obviously was PowerShell support for Active Directory by third parties. Quest, as an example, is one of the guys that did some stuff. You go off and do stuff with 2008R2 and below. Now it's simply integrated. AD Recycle Bin, we'll talk about that a little bit later on. That saved my bacon a couple of times. We'll save the stories for later on after we do our upgrades. Same thing with fine-grained password policies. And then I'll sneak in a group policy update if I can, or maybe I'll leave that one there for the next session. This is a big thing. This is the first real change, because the other stuff I mentioned up there was kind of already there in 2008R2. The recycle bin was, and so was fine-grained password policies. Dynamic access control is something that if you have not spent any time looking into, you're going to want to. We don't show you about how to implement it here in this particular session because we're dealing with upgrades. But be mindful that it's coming down the road, because that's where you can start to take advantage of a lot of things like claims-based identity to be able to behave differently based on what type of device you're accessing the data from. And also, what groups you happen to belong to. And besides those, you also now can have metadata inside your Active Directory that are now able to be used. So be very, very mindful of that one there for that. Virtualization support. Who here virtualizes their domain controllers right now?
Wow.
You're all at risk. Serious, serious human error risk. Not computer error. Human error risk. By some things that we'll talk about, unless you're running 2012, unless you're running on a hypervisor that understands what VMGen ID is, which we'll go into in good depth. And then lastly, the last part is simply, this is absolutely the easiest way to get to 2012 R2 when it comes out. So that's one of the things we wanted to share with you for why going 2012. Now, some guidelines to make your life easier because you've all decided to stick around. A couple of people unfortunately had to leave, but I'm glad you guys are sticking around because we're just about to get to our demos. The first thing is, if you need to go in and move a nasty looking Active Directory and you're considering cleaning it up before you go, I would strongly consider that you do clean it up before you go. It's much easier to do a migration to a next level after you've already collapsed some of your domains and doing stuff. The tool you're going to want to use for that one there is pretty simple. It is your Active Directory Migration Tool, or ADMT. However, there's a caveat in case you don't know. ADMT is not available on 2012. You have to keep a 2008R2 server around with the ADMT tools on it to be able to do the collapsing, the SID history, and everything else as far as moving objects between Active Directory forests and domains. So be aware of that. Current version 3.2, there is no 3.3 that's forthcoming. 2012 is out already. 2012R2 is already in the drawing boards. ADMT is not in it. There's a good TechNet support article and a supportmicrosoft.com KB article 27, 53, 56, 0. You obviously have access to all the slides. I didn't memorize it. I read it.
Okay, good.
That's there. Also, now is the time to re-architect. Don't just do the same thing. I had full GUI before, and I now have full GUI in the new environment. Don't automatically do the exact same thing. Now is the time for change. If you haven't already played around with 2012, 2012 command line environment with Server Core and MinShell is phenomenal. And the biggest secret weapon of every single administrator with 2012 should be a Windows 8 desktop running RSAT. Because you can do everything from Windows 8 desktop running RSAT. And before anyone asks, I already saw one gentleman smile over there, RSAT is already available for 8.1, and you need RSAT 8.1 to run on Windows 8.1. And you're able to down-level manage 2012 R2, 2012, 2008, 2008 R2 with the RSAT tools. Just make sure you match up the server version and the OS of the client version with those RSAT tools. So fantastic stuff there. Be aware of that. Server core considerations. We're not going to talk about it here, but reading domain controllers, they make an awful lot of sense in a lot of places. The concept of being able to cache certain people's logon credentials, passwords, and secrets on individual locations, but not everybody's. Word of caution, though, if you still have Exchange on site at those locations, they cannot use an RODC for being able to query and work with it. You have to have a full server down there, not simply an RODC server. So be aware of that. Do I have one more bullet point? I forget.
Yep.
Oops, sorry. We'll stop playing.
We're arguing over it.
And then finally, yes, absolutely. I'm going to be showing this all to you on a virtual environment. 2012 is fully supported on a virtual environment. 2802 is not recommended on virtual. You and I had a big argument about this before we even started any of this with, do you still keep a domain controller physical around anymore? You don't need to anymore. And we still have opposing ideas on stuff. Because of we've been doing AD stuff for 14 years, man. So thank you very much for listening to the preamble to kind of set the stage and level set where we're going to be. We're going to get in some hardcore demos coming in here in just a second. So let's actually go ahead and get started with this. First off is being able to go through and doing either an upgrade or a migration. What are your options? What are your choices? The majority of the room are 2008 R2. Who here, whenever something new comes out, they simply go in, take their existing thing, software version, OS version, gets the disk, installs, and simply runs setup and does an upgrade? Raise your hand.
Anyone do upgrades anymore?
One, two, three. Four.
Kind of. You just don't want to admit it.
Again, it's that whole risk-averse thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who here has been burned by doing an upgrade in place by software? Raise your hand. Everybody else, you've all been burned at some point by that. That's why we don't like doing in-place upgrades. Well, you have to kind of make that choice because, first of all, if you're 2003, there is no direct path. You can't put in a disk, do an upgrade, and go. You can't do that. If you're 2008 R2, you could, and we'll actually show you what that looks like to do an upgrade in place of a domain controller. Are you a migration or are you an upgrade person?
I've been burned. I had my hand up way up high. So I'm one of these migration guys.
Yeah.
So I don't do a lot of in-place. I do migrations. It's typically what occurred in my environment. I'm sure it happens in yours. When we go to the next version, it's because we bought some new hardware. We've got the new operating system. And as being a risk-averse person, and plus the fact the environment I worked in was 24/7 operation, it was a call center. And in a call center, if you're not taking phone calls, the company's not making money. So having any downtime, that's just was not an option for me. So I'm definitely a migration guy.
So if you remember this, you might, if you've seen upgrade sessions, I think I did these sessions in Europe a couple years ago, and you actually have done some stuff with this as well. A lot of the stuff we're talking about for migration is relatively a similar process to what we've been talking about in the past. Specifically with Active Directory. Obviously, the first thing you have to do is reboot planning. You're not just going to assume that you're going to get everything you need from this 75-minute session to go back and start your planning, just to go ahead and start your actual upgrade. So please do some more reading, do some more planning to get ready to go. And then go ahead and take a look at how you need to approach to it. You need to have a source server that's already set up. So basically, a 2012 box is a member server inside your existing domain. You then have to go in and give it possibly a temporary server name, possibly a temporary IP address. That kind of depends on your environment. This guy could be physical or virtual because you now are supporting a virtualized environment for being able to get this guy up and going.
Now, of course, as always, being the risk-averse guy here and the one guy who argues with him around virtualization, even still, obviously having that backup in place. Yes, with migration, you always have that first machine or the original machine you can go back to. But have those backup plans in place and ready to go.
Yeah. Well, these guys are smart enough. They're going to have a lab environment with their Active Directory duplicate inside of it, and they're going to try out these whole steps to see how it works. The migration itself is simply go ahead, do a DC promo, manually migrate DNS if you need to. I actually like to keep DNS and DNS and Active Directory in the same box so it handles at the same time. Transfer some FISMO roles, then migrate the IP address and rename servers if you need to, and then go ahead and do some verification steps. Finally, you can get rid of the old hardware, roll back if you need to, or troubleshoot your migration.
Now, all of the steps that we're going through today and the things that you see here, we have completely documented on the Windows Server Migration page. So you can use your favorite search engine to go find that migration data. This is a great portal. This portal is absolutely amazing because we give you not only the information of the actual, okay, I'm putting the disk in, I'm ready to go, I'm ready to start the promotion, but all of that preamble work, that pre-migration work, the things that you need to be aware of, any gotchas there, that's all documented out. Then the actual steps of doing it and all of that post-migration roll-up things that you need to accomplish, as well as some troubleshooting guidance.
Yep.
Now, one of my favorite things about these migration tools that we have is the fact that they are PowerShell based. And the fact is that we've given you the tools, so all of the information and all of the tools to actually do these migrations.
So let's actually go ahead and get started, man. So here's my virtualized environment. Lots of systems. I'm going to be showing you a bunch of different types of upgrades. I'm going to let you know right now that this guy right here, if I can just zoom in so you guys can see the names. Of course, I didn't launch Zoomit before I started this. That's kind of crazy. I thought I did. Quick, let me get Zoomit on here first.
Mark will not be happy.
I know.
With
Mark
you.
Would be totally panning my session right now. There we go. So this guy right here is our 2003 domain controller. These guys are some ones that we're going to be working on right now with an in-place upgrade and some other stuff. And then we've actually done a little bit of a trickery to speed things along, which we'll show you in just a moment that's coming up. So the first guy I'm going to go off and talk to basically is my everyday member server. That's all he is. Server manager is your tool of choice. Add roles and features. I'm sure you guys have seen this wizard before. I'm going to do a role-based install to my domain controller number 3. And I'm going to install Active Directory Domain Services. It says, hey, you should have some additional stuff on there too. Make sure that I add them in. Pretty simple. Now, I'm not going to bother putting in the DNS server because it's going to realize it needs to have it and bring it in anyway after the fact. So I'm just going to leave that as it is. It's going to ask me if I need any features. No additional features are required. Pretty simple. And then simply warns me all I'm going to do is basically bring in the binaries to this individual box. Go ahead and do a restart if required, and then hit install. Now, the neat thing about this is this could have entirely been done from my Windows 8 box at my desk talking to a member server that's domain joined inside my domain. That's server 2012. I did not need to be physically on the box for this. Very, very simple.
That's one of the great things is the fact that with Windows Server 2012 and Windows 8 and then Windows 8.1 and Server 2012 R2, the only thing that you need to do to get this remote access and the ability to do this all remotely from your desk is get those RSAT tools installed. And then once the server is actually installed and joined to the domain, you've got the ability to remotely manage. Did I see a question over here? Go ahead and yell out your question. I'll repeat it. Okay. So the question is, if you're on your Windows 8 box and you're trying to promote a server, what about your credentials? You need to be domain admin, administrator on the box.
In this case, well, you obviously have to be administrator of that member server. You don't necessarily have to be a domain admin to simply install the binaries, but you will have to in just a moment here, as you'll see, to be able to go through.
And you do have the ability to elevate up
yeah.
to do that, right? Obviously, best practice, don't always run under
right.
enterprise admin.
Now, I want to show you just a little bit of coolness here. I got to call this out because basically, in case you haven't had a chance to play around 2012, it automatically goes through and says, hey, you might be remote, you might not be remote. You got to go through and configure stuff. So it gives you links to be able to go ahead and continue with the next step. You don't have to know, oh, I got to open up a command prompt, type in DC promo, and that sort of stuff to get things done. Likewise as well, because this could have been done on a remote workstation, I have a warning up above that says, hey, you've got extra actions that have to take place on this individual box.
So what happens if I do go in and type DC promo?
If you type in DC promo, I just kind of spoiled the quick little demo of that. If you type in DC promo, it actually says, hey, DC promo has been depreciated. It no longer exists. It now, functionality has been added into this particular deployment wizard now. Now, who can remember? Who's done a DC promo before? Put up your hand if you're on DC promo. Look at, I mean, everyone's been doing that. Anyone know what's the default action of a DC promo from 2008 R2 and below? You run it, it says add a, anybody?
Anyone? Create a new forest in a new domain.
With a new domain controller. How many times would you actually do that in your lifetime? Probably not very often, unless you're making a new domain, a new forest. If you're actually, like most people, you're going to use these answers, which is add a domain controller to an existing domain. So it's only taken us 14 years to get the wizard configured correctly for you. And then it goes up here and basically says, okay, what's the domain you're going to join? And then what credentials are you going to use? And this is interesting because you can be doing this as a standard user, citing the administrative credentials if you needed to, and it will go off and basically do stuff remotely to that box as required. I'm going to go in here and put in the proper credentials. This is where I was wondering if my fat finger typing curse is going to come back. It will not let you pass unless you have domain admin rights as well as enterprise admin rights to be able to get in and do some modifications in here. It then goes ahead and checks and says, hey, is this guy want to be a DNS server or a GC? Sure, go ahead. Now, also, you'll notice here that it gives me the option of being a read-only domain controller. That actually does not come up if this is the very first DC promo you're running on 2012, because to be a read-only domain controller, you have to have a 2008R2 box or a 2012 box to be your primary source target. Put in your credentials for the DSRM, for the password. Did I type it in right? Yep. No, I didn't. Well, the first one's wrong. There we go.
There we go.
Okay, it says because it's a demo environment, it can't trace up the tree to find out DNS-wise if I have the proper rights. You don't have to worry about that because it's a demo environment. Additional options, I cannot do an install for media unless I have a 2012 system state already created, so I can't use that. I can replicate from a target domain controller or just anyone that's available. I'm going to say anyone. And then it says, here's your default locations. Now, this is back to my Exchange days. This is, again, only really applies if you have a very large Active Directory environment. You basically would be putting your log files on sequential I.O. disks. You'd be putting your database DIT file on random I.O. disks because of the way that databases are made. And then you generally keep your sysfall away from both of those for performance. That's really if it's really, really, really large with lots of transactions. I'm keeping the default because this is simply a demo. Goes through and allows you to review your options. If you wanted to, you can view the script for an automation, which I'll be looking at a little bit later on, to be able to automate the deployment of PowerShell for a particular domain controller, and then go ahead and do my checks. Now, this is really neat. This will actually go out and actually tell you, hey, you haven't extended the schema yet. I'm going to go ahead and do that. Can I? Do I have the proper credentials? Oh, he gave me the credentials that are also the schema admin, so I'm going to go ahead and do that. So basically, it would warn me of everything that could possibly go wrong, ask me to resolve it, and then allow me to finally go through with the entire thing. Simply warning me here that, first of all, there's a possible, because it's NT4/2003R2 that's out there, there might be clients that only understand NTLM, be aware of that. And then also, again, my DNS error message, which is irrelevant because it's a demo environment. Go ahead and start. It goes in and says, hey, again, same warning, cryptography. And checking to make sure that everything is fine. It would extend the schema just by adding in the different pieces it needs for 2012. And then going ahead and adding delegation and finishes off.
So this is kind of the main first step, the first jumping in point, is get that first Server 2012 domain controller in place. And it's really, really, very simple. Now, our main domain controller that we're using in this environment is still running Windows Server 2003.
Right.
So that's our main domain controller that currently holds all of our FSMO roles. So there's nothing, you know, secret sauce that we've got going here. So what we're going to do now is you'll go ahead and close this, and that server is now going to restart. And when it comes back up, we'll have our new brand spanking new Server 2012 domain controller.
There we go. About to be signed off.
Now,
I'm hoping there's no questions about the wizard. It's pretty simple. DC promo at the command line doesn't exist anymore. You can do a DC promo and DC deploy with PowerShell, which I'll show you in just a couple of minutes here from where it is. While this guy reboots, comes back up again. Now, as you mentioned, and we came across this the other night, trying to fix a bunch of stuff. You are never going to try to do a DC promo and integration of migration techniques that we're showing you right now in the compressed time format of 75 minutes. Don't hold yourself to that bar, because replication has to converge across your domain to make sure it knows of everybody, the replication's all happy and fine. Go slowly at a pace that you're comfortable with to make sure all that replication is done, DNS is happy, and all that sort of stuff. It's part of your planning process, and it's just good, solid stuff. Don't be like us and try to force stuff through in a 65-minute, 75-minute time frame, because you'll run into problems like we did and have to try to figure out how to fix stuff last night.
Trying to go back in your head to the Server 2003 days of troubleshooting replication and the tools that you need and finding those tools, always a fun game. So, you server back up yet?
Yeah, I'm just booting back up to see if it's all done. That's all.
There's a couple of other things that we can do besides just bringing in a brand new domain controller.
Yep. You know what? Let's actually, while we're waiting for that guy to come back up. Oh, there he is right there.
Okay.
He's there already.
Up.
Full screen, sign on. And boom. You'll notice that when Server Manager starts up, he now has ADDS nodes on the left-hand side, Active Directory Domain Services nodes on the left-hand side, and there'll be a bunch of error messages and issues as he tries to establish himself. KCC has to kick in for replication, partnerships, and that sort of stuff. So let it percolate, let it get happy before you continue on. We're going to basically do this cooking show style and just kind of leave him in the background and come back.
I'm going to let DNS replicate because we are using an Active Directory integrated DNS zone. So we got to get all that DNS replication right. So the DNS stuff has kind of happened so AD can replicate, but DNS has to exist so AD can replicate. So it's going to argue with itself for a little bit before that gets going.
So while we're there, there's some other options. We talked about, first of all, the ability to go through and possibly do an in-place upgrade. That's definitely an option. And we decided we were going to do one for a demo, and then I timed it. You don't want to see a progress bar and a circular donut spinning for that long.
I thought that's why we got this brand new server.
Well, we actually did manage to provision a brand new server. I don't know if you guys have heard it. We got it from our friends at Intel. It's an Intel Core i7000. And we did an install on that guy there earlier. And it's a 32-minute install process. Actually only took about a minute and a half. So just to prove that it does work, this was a 2008 domain controller that we popped in the USB stick of memory and did the install. And you can see it here in its minute and 30 seconds of glory as it goes through, and it absolutely works. And reboots, comes up.
It's upgrades. A really, really fast server.
Yeah. I'm trying to provision a couple of these for our demos environments in the future.
It's just a recording that we're playing back at 2,000
times? 2,000
times. 2,000 times.
The normal time.
Just to show, again, and this server today is in our environment.
Yeah.
It's running today.
So this server is actually called DC6, as you'll see in a moment here. And I've got him right here. I'm going to continue with some steps on him in just a moment.
And we're going to restart again.
It does a bunch of restarts, does some database updates and stuff. It's almost there. Please wait.
Getting ready.
Almost there.
We should have put a timer on this one, too.
No way.
Are there any questions so far? So far, so good? All right, so we figured we'd save you the pain of a 30-minute 2008 upgrade.
It's completely supported. Actually, upgrades are one of the things. There we go. It's all done. Upgrades are actually one of those things that are actually tested the most inside the test dev environment. No, I want to do that one there. I'm talking about virtualization next. No, we're not going to talk about this yet.
I didn't think so.
You got it. We'll come back to that guy there.
The upgrade scenario is one of the most tested scenarios from our development environment.
Yeah.
They spend hours upon hours upon hours upon hours with lots and lots of servers going through them, and they do it build by build.
Right. Now, this is the guy that basically went through the upgrades in place. So he's 2012 already. The other guy is still replicating. He has issues, so we're going to let him converge and just kind of acquiesce in the background. That's right there. What I'm going to do is basically transfer the FISMO roles. Notice how I said transfer, not seize. You don't want to seize the FISMOs away. Transfer is the smoother, nicer way to do this. And you can do this through GUI tools, but you got to go through like five different GUI tools. I'm going to instead just use the good old NTDS util. Go into my FISMOs. Roles. I have to connect up to the domain controller. And I say connect to server DC6. So the idea is that you're basically bringing this guy over to where you want it to be for the roles coming across. Quit. And the roles you have to bring across are obviously your five. Infrastructure master, domain naming master, and then your PDC RID master and schema master. All five of them have to come across. So bear with me as I type this. Joey, you can provide some color commentary as I type.
Sure, absolutely. Now, in this case, we are in a demo environment, so we do have all of the flexible single master operators in one machine. I'm sure my AD gurus in the room would know. Which ones do you not want together? Anyone? Shout it out. The infrastructure master, yes? And a global catalog, right? So we're going to go ahead and take those. When would we seize a role? When you will never get the server back, as we learned, working on this.
Yes, otherwise you do metadata cleanup. You don't want to be doing metadata cleanup.
I'm sorry? Is it on PowerShell?
Good question. The question was, is the ntds util commands available on PowerShell? The answer is no. Still ntds util. Now, I just did all five roles. The way you know that this actually worked is you have to look. So here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So all five are transferred. In case you don't know, FISMO role transfers are an immediate urgent replication that happens. So all domain controllers are basically not going to wait for their scheduled time to replicate. They will replicate this information relatively fast to each other. But we're still going to play it safe and let this percolate for a little bit and then come back to this whole concept of virtualization. Any questions on the FISMO role transfers? Oh, the most important part. Update your red binder for where the new roles are located, or move the post-it note from the old server to the new server to where they are.
This is the FISMO. This is the FISMO. So where are we at today? We have got server 2003.
Still there.
Still there.
He no longer has the roles.
Still in place. We brought in a new 2012 server. We're going to let that replicate. And then you saw with our awesome Intel Core i7 million that we have actually gone from a 2008 R2 machine to a 2012 machine. So we're essentially looking at three domain controllers in play. Two of them are at 2012. We've still got one sitting back. It no longer has those roles. We've actually moved those roles over to the machine that was upgraded. And then as soon as we're finished, we'll do some decommissioning. Now, we're going to... I'm still not quite on this on this bandwagon here with you yet.
Right. So 2012 is the first operating system that we've made with domain controllers that actually has virtualization built in. Think about it. 2008 R2, 2008 timeframes, you probably weren't quite in the frame of mind of virtualizing everything as of yet. You probably are now, and it's a great use of resources. The problem that exists is the ability to roll back a snapshot and have your AD go back in time. That is the worst possible thing you could ever do to your Active Directory because it creates this lovely thing called a USN bubble. USN bubble is something that doesn't sound all that difficult, except it is extremely difficult to try to troubleshoot and figure out what went wrong. Imagine this scenario. You had 10 domain controllers, and you had one of them that was virtualized that you then roll back in time. I don't want to keep it like that. That's the slides. It goes back in time to 3 months ago. Any changes that have occurred since it went back in time and 3 months ago are basically already been replicated across, except to it. And the problem is, without changing the algorithm of how Active Directory replicates, you can't have it come back up again and say, oh, I'm back, and bring me back all my stuff, because it thinks that it's current. So that's where you come up with the USN bubble. Just to kind of explain a little bit better here, here's DC1. I created a snapshot. My USN value is at 100. I got a RID pool between 500 and 1,000. I then go ahead and add 100 users. And I go ahead and replicate that with a DC domain controller number 2. It now thinks that my USN value, which is, again, my high watermark, thinks that I'm at 200. Instead, what happens is the co-op gets a hold of the console, rolls back a snapshot from a time ago, and basically rolls it back in time to it where it thinks its USN value is 100. And it then will go ahead and also have a RID pool that goes back to 100 places as well. But then I go ahead and create 150 more users. That guy was the guy that responded, because it's a multi-master environment. I now have a USN of 250. And I have a RID pool that's now at 650. I now have just absolutely screwed my Active Directory, because when I try to replicate with the new guy, it says, hey, my USN value is 200. And it says, is 250. And it says, oh, you're 250? Well, here's the 50 things you're missing, not the 100 that you already told me about that you don't know about. So what that means in non-technical terms, that one domain controller now doesn't know of password changes that have occurred. So if that user that changed their password during that time frame logs on any of the other domain controllers, it works. If they happen to hit that one, the password's the old password, and it doesn't work, and they call a help desk. Or worse, the duplicate SID issue. So basically, you just created a big pain and problem with what's out there. So the good thing is, 2012 supports this new thing called VMGenID. VMGenID is an attribute that's written inside the ACPI BIOS of the virtual machine that is written and modified by the hypervisor whenever a new import is done or whenever a snapshot is applied. If neither of those two actions have happened, the VMGenID does not change. If either one of those two things did, the number changes. And what happens is Active Directory, before it does anything, When it initializes, it checks to say, hey, what's my VMgen ID? And is it the same the last time that I tried to do a write action on my Active Directory? Ooh, it's different. Pretend like basically you don't know what happened and do a install from media style replication from your current version to Active Directory over to any other domain controller you possibly can, which basically means that you reset your USN, you dump your RID pool, and all those changes you made now come back. Extremely important that that happens. Now, because that now happens, you now are able to do some other really cool things called cloning, because you can now go through and basically set up a copy of your active of your domain controller, run some PowerShell scripts on it that basically is leveraging this ability to do a snapshot rollback, and then speed up the deployment of your Active Directory with multiple domain controllers. The way it works, basically you have to go in and add the machine to a group called clonable domain controllers. You have to have 2012, not just yet, you have to have 2012 in place, and you have to basically have a hypervisor that supports VMgen ID. Currently, VMware, do they support it or not? They have the spec. You have to talk to your VMware folks and representatives and support personnel to see if they've implemented it yet. Last time I heard, it was still in beta. Same thing with Xen. But we support it, and it's available now in 2012 and also 2012 R2. The concept with a clone is you've done the group membership, you've gone ahead and authorized it, you've taken a snapshot of the guy, or you've exported it, and now you want to duplicate this 15 times, 20 times, 100 times for 100 new domain controllers. What happens is that guy boots up for the very first time. It says directory services actually goes ahead and starts. What's my VMgen ID? It then says, oh, it's different from my DIT file. Go ahead and drop my invocation ID, discard my RID pool, so basically my USN value is now invalid, it's been rolled back, and then check and see if I'm doing a clone. If I wasn't doing a clone, this is where I would simply skip the rest of these steps, initiate a new replication with your partner, and then everything would be good. You do not have a bubble situation. In this case, if you ran the PowerShell scripts, it looks for a particular clone file, which gives it enough information to start a DC promo, and go ahead and read the clone config file to get pertinent information, including what's the IP address that I should be using on this network structure? Where is my PDC by querying Active Directory and querying DNS to be able to find it? Go ahead and make a call to that guy. The 2012 domain controller with the PDC FISMO role is going to come back and basically say, hey, check that group. Are you part of the group? Are you the machine that's allowed to be the source for this clone? You don't want anyone just cloning people, right? Go ahead and make a new object, duplicate the machine, basically, make a brand new SID, brand new computer account. It follows an algorithm by simply incrementing the number by one. You can control that if you want to. Then go ahead and basically give the configuration settings within Active Directory. And then finally, generate a new machine account, a new password, pass that back to this guy. He continues with the clone state, changes his name, changes the local password, and then does an IFM, install from media, from whatever the local clone of that guy was, and finally goes through to sysprep, and then does a reboot, comes up, and he's done.
Yeah, one of the things that cloning really allows us to do is that I've been in several situations where I was basically the enterprise admin guy. I was the guy in charge of moving from, and I've done this several times, from Windows 2000 to Server 2003, and then the last project I did before I joined Microsoft is to do a big series of upgrades from 2003 up to 2008. And one of the things that we did, we were shipping servers all over the United States and actually all over the world. We had 65 locations all over the world because we held kind of the master key and that kind of whole enterprise thing. And before we actually had the ability to do install from media, what we would actually do is we would bring in the servers into our infrastructure, basically prep them, get them all ready to go, and then we would send them out. Now with the ability for me to virtualize this, it enables me to already configure, and Rick's going to show you how we actually clone a virtual machine, so that now instead of having all these physical boxes shipped to me, I could actually create these clones, get that media out to them, get them to import in those virtual machines, and they're up and running without me having to send all the servers into Texas and then ship them all around the world over to India and the Philippines and deal with those fun and games. And it's a very, very easy way to rapidly, once you get that, you get to that 2012 level, you get elevated up so that you can start taking advantage of VMgen ID to actually get these domain controllers rolled out very, very quickly and rapidly.
Right. So over here, a little bit first, I'm going to get this guy ready to go. My DC number 4 is currently just a member server. I'm going to go ahead here using PowerShell and just very quickly and simply go ahead and install a new feature of the binaries for Active Directory domain services on this box.
Now, is there any difference here with this PowerShell that you're using here to create the clone, at least these steps, than to me use PowerShell just to upgrade my domain controllers?
No, again, this is simply I'm going to install the binaries, and I'm going to go ahead and do a DC promo. But remember when I did the first one with the GUI, it said view the script. I'm just using that script to be able to prepare this clean 2012 machine as my domain controller. Again, I don't want to use my previously upgraded guy. I don't want to use my newly installed guy because he might not be done replicating. That's why I'm doing this with a clean guy right here. So he's done. He's got the binaries installed. He's all set to go. And then I want to go through here and simply make sure I've got my deployment piece brought in. And then here is the ability to go through and install from a PowerShell file. In this case, I'm not going to make it a global catalog. I'm going to go ahead and use some credentials, replicate from another guy, database path, simple stuff you should be able to have gotten from that help file. So this guy goes ahead, asks me for my credentials. Put them in. Safe mode password, if I can type it in correctly. Goes ahead and configures it, verifies prerequisites. Again, it warns me about the secure channel. So this part is simply, again, I'm making DC4, a domain controller, with one line of command. I could do this on a variety of different types of machines and go through the whole process.
Well, that domain controller, so he's in basically the same steps that we did graphically is what's happening. He's installed the binaries. Now he's saying, okay, great, let's promote it. This is the domain you want to promote to, and we're going to get this up and running. And then eventually, we're going to have to think about maybe getting rid of that old 2003 domain controller that we have in there as well.
Good point.
And then is there a lot of change that you have to do once this is installed to get it ready to start cloning?
All there is one of the command line I got to run, basically. He's already up and running as a domain controller. I simply go in and run the PowerShell command, ad clone config file. And here you can see the address of what I'm going to be using, my default gateway and my subnet mask for the clone when it comes up, where my DNS is to be able to ask questions, and then what site should I be looking for. That little PowerShell command is going to basically configure all the stuff I need to have in my XML file to be able to do the actual clone itself. There we go. This guy's done. He goes off and reboots. You know what? While he's rebooting and coming back up again, let's go ahead and let's demote that 2003 box. I don't want him kicking around anymore.
Yeah, I think it's time.
Okay. So he's number 5. Here's 2003. I apologize for the smaller size because he doesn't have a video card to be able to fill up the screen. Of what we need to do. Anyone know what DC demo is? It's nothing. It doesn't exist. DC promo is how you demote something. There we go. Welcome to the install wizard. That warns you that this is a GC. Make sure you've got other global catalog servers around that are out there. Do not check this box unless you're looking for a new job, because that will basically just toast your Active Directory environment. Now, if it stops there and says, hey, replication isn't finished for Active Directory, you basically could have to wait till it converges and then come back to this and then finish this off. Mine has already happened long enough, so I'm just going to give this guy a new password here with the local server administrator account.
Did you want to stop the netlogon service before you go?
It actually worked last time, remember?
Okay. So one of the key things that we've actually done, and I found this, once I get replication happy and everything, I like to stop the netlogon service. Right? That's going to keep things from going. And it also actually speeds this process up a little bit.
Yeah, right here is where it waits.
Wait, as it's going to stop that service. So I've typically, in my past life, as I go through and do this, I'm really finicky about replication because I dealt with 65 sites located all across the globe, some of them basically using, I think, a piece of string and two tin cans to do replication. At least that's how I felt with some of these remote locations that we were having to manage. So one of the things that we learned this week as we were bringing this environment back in, having run it in New Orleans, is that if replication isn't particularly happy, this demotion process can cause issues.
I was going to say, if replication isn't happy, you're not happy. If DNS isn't happy, you're not happy. Get those guys up and resolved first. Now, I'm going to let that guy sit for a bit. I'm going to come back to my DC4. That was my new domain controller that I just finished going off and promoting. Close off that window, open it back up again to continue with the cloning process. So we'll see the binaries are now up and running. When this guy finishes off, there we go. Active Directory is up there and running. Things are good. I'm just going to go off here and run the ISE to be able to pull up my little cheat sheet to get that command line once again. There it is. So the file I need to run is right here. This is the command line. I already explained to you what the command line was. I'm going to run it. It's going to come back and actually give me an error message. Basically, that there is a problem because there were some files that are not supported on the clone aspect of things. You need to go off and fix what those files happen to be. So I can actually go through here and say, let's figure out what those files happen to be. Copy that down here and paste it. And it's going to tell me by looking at this, oh, I've got Silverlight installed.
So why do you have Silverlight on your domain controller?
I guess someone must have browsed and installed the Silverlight plugin on my server. It wasn't me. So let's go in here and programs, get rid of it. Programs and features. There's Silverlight, uninstall. Remove it. Obviously, you have to resolve these. You can put an exception in if you wanted to, but generally, your domain controller should be relatively clean without other sort of stuff inside it. DNS is fine. Everything else is fine. Going back to my command line here, now if I go and run this guy again, he's going to say, good, there we go. So basically, the error message up above is simply saying there's a clone config file. Can I find everything? Everything's all good. The big thing here is Actually, no, it did not.
Did not do it. You've got something going on there.
DNS resolver. First site name, 10.1, 10.3. It's all good, my friend.
Are we going to do live troubleshooting on stage? This is what happens, right? Reality, this is what happens.
The command line is correct. It's got the address.
It says it's having a hard time reading from Contoso.
No, look at this. What was the thing I told you had to do?
I don't know.
I planned this error. Not a member of any groups.
The domain controller is not a member of any groups.
So the group that I have to be a member of is right here under users. Clonable domain controllers. I forgot to add the computer account into this particular group to allow it to proceed. Clonable domain controllers, go into members, let's add a member into this.
And this is a default group once you
get
2012.
Once you get 2012 up there. Adding computers, this guy's DC4, check names, there he goes. Hit OK. And then let's go and see if he's happy. There's DC4. Execute him again. I need to wait for replication to occur.
Let's go back and check on our 2003 server then while replication occurs.
It's 2003. Oh, look, it's done. No error message. If you did get an error message because the timeout occurred with net log on, you simply have to hit the back button and then forward button again, then it works. I've faced that before. Hit finish, hit restart, shut him down. Now, you could transfer the IP address. There are some TechNet articles that talk about if you make changes to IP addresses with domain controllers, be very sensitive and careful about it.
Yeah.
Domain controller names, you shouldn't need to bring this guy in as a same name domain controller someplace else in 2012 unless you absolutely have to. I don't recommend it. Again, this is part of your planning process to make sure everything is good. In theory, I can actually just turn this guy off and not worry about him at all. I don't need him for anything, right? So he's just going to come back up as a member server that I could log on with and I could use him, but ideally I'm going to want to decommission him and just go from there.
All right, so we've got everything cleaned up. We're ready to start. We're going to finish waiting for replication here to clone up. Now we're actually ready to start implementing some fantastic features that we've got in Windows Server 2012.
We're assuming that you've already gone ahead and completed the bulk of your deployments of new 2012 domain controllers, either through cloning or through the standard process that you would use inside your environment. Once you got 2012, it's out there. The biggest thing you can do is, first of all, possibly go ahead and drop your GUI. Go from a server full GUI down to a server core because it is smaller in size. Reduced maintenance, everything else is good. The best thing about 2012 is when you actually go ahead and do this, if you needed to bring it back for any reason, you can. You simply add the feature back in again. and then you need to take it away, you remove it away again. Just be cautious that each time you go in and change the GUI to a server core or a server min shell, you do require a restart. It can be done through the command line with PowerShell, or it can be done with a GUI interface, the server manager. So think about dropping your server domain controllers down to server cores. It generally should result in less patching and less maintenance. You have to worry about it. Word of caution, though, just being a little bit of a nervous Nelly here. Third-party software and drivers that you have installed on that box need to be tested in the core mode first, because they may or may not work. If they're up to date, they probably should work.
Yes.
Again, the great thing is you can always configure and run them in server GUI, get them all happy, drop it down to core in your lab, see if it works fine, leave it as server core for 6, 8, 9, 10, 12, 15 months, whatever. If you ever need to make any changes, you could bring it back again, make it so it's full GUI again, and then make the changes, and then come back again. So you can switch back and forth when you need to for that.
So in our environment now, we're ready to go ahead and raise the functional levels that we need to do, because we've demoted that.
Provided the replication's finished with the fact that DC5 is no longer there, and every other piece of replication we're now cramming together in 65 minutes is also finished. So I'm just going to hold it for 1 second, because you don't need to change the functional level. This was still functional level 2003 to bring in a 2012 memory server, promote it to 2012, and then go in and transfer the FISMOs. You're still 2003 environment or 2008. But once you do go to 2008/2012, you can do what I call the oops.
I've gotten this email.
Yeah?
It's not from you.
Good.
And it actually came in the form of a phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning. So we had round-the-clock 24-hour support when things weren't happening in the United States. Things were happening in another part of the world. Our counterparts down in Asia would do a lot of Active Directory maintenance when we were not working, when we were in our sleep time. So I got a phone call from my buddy down in Asia, and he says, hey, I just wanted to let you know we were going through this particular change control, and part of this change control was deleting an old OU that we no longer need. However, what occurred is we deleted the Cincinnati OU. And I said, what part of the Cincinnati OU? He said, the top level, the whole thing. Now, our company was headquartered in Cincinnati. We also had three of our largest call centers in Cincinnati. So I said, okay, how did this happen? He says, well, we were doing it. We thought we had the right one. We didn't really click. We didn't really read. Are you sure you really want to delete this? Are you really sure you want to delete this? No, really, do you want to delete this? And it got deleted. So I said, no problem. Because in anticipation of potential issues, I had a domain controller that was specifically set up to do delayed replication. And we did delayed replication by 4 hours. In case something like this ever occurred, we could very quickly go ahead and overwrite those changes, right, by bumping up the SID values and going ahead and getting and moving it forward. I said, no problem. When did this happen? He said, it happened at 10 p.m. my time. It's now 3 a.m. Oh, yeah, so those changes have now replicated through my entire organization. So I get up, get dressed, drive all the way down to the office, which is about 40 minutes away. I walk in, I say, no problem, I've got a domain controller here. My call center was closed because we weren't running 24/7 at that time. So I said, I'll just take my domain controller offline and I'll do a restore from backup tape. So I go in and I look at my backup media and it says there was a successful backup that had just occurred about 8 p.m. that night. And I'm thinking, I am golden. This is going to be easy as pie. So I take my tape, slap it in the tape drive, open up my backup utility, go ahead and start the restore. And what do you think it says? Unable to read from media. Anybody seen that before? Backup tapes? Yeah. You mean the media you just wrote to a couple of hours ago, right? So at this point, panic pretty much ensues. Because I know, and I think we're about 5-ish a.m. by the time I've hit this point, and I know I'm less than 1 hour away from all of our executives arriving at the office and those call centers opening up in Cincinnati, Ohio. So what do? You have to find another machine somewhere and do another authoritative restore. Or, I was thinking, Mark Rusinovich writes some really cool tools, and I could actually bring some of these objects back, right? All my user accounts and everything, I can pull them out of Toonstone. It's called reanimation, right? Because I'd gone to tech and listened to Mark speak, and I saw this. I'm like, I'm going to do this. So I reanimate the objects. But see, here's the mistake that I made. When you do tombstone reanimation before the recycle bin, you can get the objects back and the users can actually authenticate. But there's one teeny weeny little piece of information that doesn't come back. It's all your group memberships.
That's not important.
And see, I do this whole global group, domain local group, assign permissions. So even though I was able to get the users to authenticate, they couldn't actually do any work. The moral of this story is $350,000 of lost revenue later, plus me having to write a very detailed report as to how this occurred, the Active Directory recycle bin is the first thing, and once you get up to 2008 R2, you should enable. Because had this occurred previously, I could just go to the recycle bin and very quickly implement it. Now, before, to enable the recycle bin, I had to do a bunch of PowerShell.
Right. You had to, first of all, make sure your forest functional level and your domain functional level were at 2008 R2 levels, which
yep.
means you could not have any 2003 or down-level domain controllers. Once that was satisfied and finished, then you could use PowerShell to go in and basically enable it, and it's a non-reversible option. Why would you want to turn off the recycle bin? I don't know why, but it's a non-reversible option. So this is one of those forest and domain function level dependent feature sets that exist. In 2012, it's now beautiful. I still can't show it to you because we're waiting for all this replication for all these domain controllers to finish.
Oh, so you got to elevate it up. Yep.
I don't want to elevate it and possibly screw up the last little bit of the demo, so I'm just going to talk about this. But basically, it's a GUI environment. The tools you'll be using is Active Directory Administrative Center, and it literally is, on the right-hand side, you know what? What the heck? Let's play with danger. Danger. Okay, here's my Active Directory Administrative Center. Right over here, you remember that I already went ahead and added my clone, which is still waiting patiently to replicate, because again, it's new, to say that it's allowed to be a source for my clonable domain controller. But right over here, if I had my domain level, is where I choose raise the forest functional level, as well as raise the domain functional level as well. Once that is done, so I'm just going to do the forest level to make it simple. It warns me, Curse functional level is version 2003. You're going to bring it up to 2008? Nah, baby. I'm going all the way. 2012. Hit OK. Changes will affect the entire forest. After you raise the forest functional level, it's possible you may not be able to reverse it. Yep, I'm good. It was raised successfully. If I check the domain level, you'll see the domain level basically automatically pops itself up to 2012 for this guy because I'm inside the one domain forest. He's all done. Now, I need to wait for that to replicate amongst my three or four domain controllers. One more thing that's going along. You know what? Let's go back and see if my replication is finished for my clonable guy to be happy. Here's my clone config file. Go ahead and run it. Look at that. It's green. Exactly
yeah.
what I wanted to see. Yes. So. It basically says there's no software that's in violation of upgrade policy for being able to do a clone, and also you belong to the proper secure group, you have the proper credentials, so now I am all set to go.
So what do you do now?
Simple. Shut it down.
Okay.
Once it's shut down, I then, using whatever tool you need to use from your administrative environment, simply say export and bring it out to a location. Oh, okay, let's make a new folder called clone DC. There we go. Select folder, hit export, and I have to wait for the lovely 20 gigabytes.
So Rick, once this is all exported, everything's done.
Yeah.
Is it just simply a matter of me grabbing it, importing it in, and doing that 100 times?
So if you've ever used Hyper-V Manager before, when you say import machine, you say generate new ID and copy the files. You can use this clone image for up to the garbage recycle bin time of the Active Directory, 90 days, 180 days, whatever it is you set it to from the defaults. Before it becomes too old to use. You will want to patch this. Again, it's going to come up in an unpatched state potentially over the last 3 months or whatever it happens to be, basically making yourself a new one. You can't obviously go ahead and patch it while it's offline because as soon as it comes up, it's going to make itself into a clone. Anywhere where this particular instance is used on Hyper-V in this particular example, it's going to boot up and do that flowchart that I told you. Boot it up, it's going to have a new VM gen ID, it's going to say, oh, that's different. Go in and take a look at the NTDS DIT file, oh, it's different. Is there a clone config file which that PowerShell tool made? Yes, there is. Start to process it. It'll get a hard-coded IP address, it'll know where DNS is, it'll ask for the PDC emulator, and continue the process. And basically that guy now comes up. So provided we have enough time, we only have 5 minutes left, you'll have to take me for my word, unfortunately, for this point, that this 35% will finish off. I simply would go in and say import, make another copy, and basically bring it in, and you can do this as many times. Now picture this, believe it or not, when this clone comes up on hardware, you're bringing up a new domain controller, perfectly safe, all virtualized, brand new and ready to go, in about 5 minutes. Times that by 100. That's probably the fastest way you can possibly get through a new rollout of domain controllers for 2012.
Yeah, absolutely. I would
have
loved
that. So we'll let this percolate. If I have a chance before we end off the slides, I'll come back and just show you that last little bit.
As well as the recycle bin.
As well as the recycle bin, too.
All right. The next thing that we have caused a lot of heartache and pain in our world, which is probably why a lot of us have multiple domains in our environment. And that's the ability to keep different password policies, right? Certain organizations have certain complexity requirements. But then there's the guy up on the 31st floor in the really, really big office who drives the really nice car, who always wants a separate password policy than everybody else.
But he mandates the difficult one for everybody, right?
He mandates the difficult for everybody, but he wants his to be password. Am I wrong? We all have those guys, right? The other way to look at this, and that's kind of an extreme example, but a lot of times you've got to have multiple password policies. I actually implemented having multiple password policies for our admins. Our admins actually had to have more complex passwords than our users did. The old way to do that was via domains. There's a lot of government requirements now that also require having stricter policies. And when you're a call center and you're working for, I'll use an extreme example, Coke and Pepsi at the same time, they have different policies. We have to be able to support those. So the old way was domains. The new ways is by leveraging password setting objects. So we can actually have multiple password policies across. And we've had this for a little bit now, but it's a good reason to get up to the latest and greatest version.
Yeah.
And then furthermore, it's the future. And Rick talked about this in the beginning, talking about dynamic access control.
Right.
Basically, the ability for me to get away from the days of having to manage a gazillion and a half groups and permissions and this, that, and the other.
I'm willing to bet you're like most people where your group memberships kind of mirror your OU structure because that's the way you probably mirrored it up, right? It's by functional level. You're duplicating the data that's already inside Active Directory with physical groups.
Yeah, absolutely. Or it's even more complicated than my OU structure,
yeah.
Right?
So the idea is that basically with the dynamic access control, you have the ability to go through to essentially manage this idea of Active Directory, resolve end user permissions, go ahead and pre-stage the environment and test it right now. We're not advocating that you remove all your groups and you stop doing this sort of stuff on groups at all. Instead, what I'm advocating is that you simply get used to the concept of you're now able to now identify machines that will be able to say, hey, I claim with my user account because I have an attribute called finance, that is my department, that can now be used as a security descriptor nugget, ACE. My user clearance also could be listed as one. Maybe an employee type of intern could be used as one as well. My devices can also go ahead and be making claims as well with an Active Directory if they have computer accounts. And finally, individual file folders and individual files themselves can have them as well. So the idea is that for access to financial information that has a high business impact because it was classified by the file server, a user must be in the finance department, not a group, in the finance department attribute, with a high security clearance because they're not an intern, and must use a managed device, not an RT tablet, not an iPad, to be able to have access to it. Imagine the flexibility you would have to be able to do this. However, the complexity to do that with groups is insane. Now you're able to do this now. The best thing is you can set this up in simulation mode and try stuff out. It's a big shift, but it's the way you're going to want to go in the not-too-distant future. The flow basically is you have Active Directory domain services to create your definitions of what the possible claims could be. You go ahead and map different attributes on individual files, and you make a group policy. This group policy then gets forced down on top of the file servers, which then implement it on top of the files on a regular scheduled basis. The file server goes ahead and applies that policy, and then when the user tries to access it is when this comes in. All the ACLs still apply for groups, but now you have a new ACE entry, which is dynamic access control. ACE is access control entry that basically now says give them access or don't give them access.
All right, we have just a minute left, so I want to just quickly get back here because I told you, first thing we got to do is we got to enable that recycle bin, right? So we've got replication has already occurred. This is really hard. I've clicked the enable the recycle bin.
Careful.
Okay.
Be very careful. You can't undo this.
I'm not going to undo it because it's exactly what I want to do. And once I click refreshed, did it refresh?
I think it did.
I said refresh. You will see now that I have the deleted objects container right there. So we're good to go. So we won't run into those situations that we had that I was dealing with previously.
Right. So any object that you had in the past would be able to be deleted now from this point forward once that is replicated. You would then be able to go ahead and restore it from that particular location, and you'd be able to save yourself the trouble of having to do a stateful backup and restore on your system. Now that clone piece, it's now in the process of copying itself out to be imported back in again. Unfortunately, you ran out of time to be able to do that. What I would ask you, if you could, please, is be very conscious of the fact that this is Friday. There's a small number of people in the room. We'll be very interested in knowing how you like this particular session. We're going to be coming back with some more depth about networking and more depth about storage in the upcoming sessions coming up. If this type of session was of interest to you and you enjoyed it, please fill out an evaluation form. Give us some good numbers. Fives and fours are the highest you could possibly give. But also, more importantly, we're looking for constructive comments and criticisms on how to do better. But this was a unique session to be able to bring into TechEd. It was originally there. I fought to be able to get the upgrade content in there, and it made it here for Europe. So stick around in this room because we'll be here for the rest of the day talking about networking next and then also talking about storage to wrap up the day. To be respectful of your time and also lunch queues, you're welcome to come down and ask us some questions. Thank you very much for sticking around for us, and we hope you enjoy the last couple of sessions in TechEd.
Thanks.